Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm your host, Paul David, joined today by David Glennie, who's the founder and CEO of Voodoo Park. Great name, David.
Thank you.
Fantastic name.
We're going to talk. David Glennie is a really good name.
Yeah. David Glennie, okay, but also Voodoo Park. We're going to talk with David today about purpose-driven tech for enterprise transformation. I'm going to do a very long introduction of you right now, David. Prepare yourself. David's background is quite unique in the tech world. He's been an actor, which you can sense his presence, a musician, a care worker before founding his purpose-driven tech company in 2012. Park specializes in creating transformational technology for the financial services industry. What really sets them apart is their commitment to social impact. And that's something we talked about and sort of vibed on, and we'll get into that. Like Little Humans, Voodoo Park is a certified B Corp. How long have y'all been a B Corp for?
We're coming up to our first renewal, so a couple of years.
Okay, a couple of years. Okay, we're baby B Corp. We just started.
Yeah, baby B.
Voodoo Park donates 10% of their profits to their own charitable trust, supporting projects for women and girls worldwide, a critical issue. They've even pioneered the world's first international trade union for software engineers. I want to hear how that works. Under David's leadership, they've grown into a global operation, having created over 67 million lines of code across 285 different software technologies.
I honestly don't remember making that stat up.
Right. Okay.
So it's obviously a made up stat, right?
Track it?
No, well, exactly. Did you have an intern count it? Do you know what it sounds? There was a period of time. There was a period of time where we had an agency.
Okay.
Right. A marketing agency, and that sounds like their work.
Marketing agencies would do
that. They love a good number.
They love a key
study. Here's a key
stat,
67 million. It also sounds made up because I was born in 1967.
Oh.
So it sounds like a number that I made up on the spot.
Okay. Well, I mean, we'll take you at your marketing agency's word and then just ride with it and figure it out. Your latest innovation is AIMEE. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
A transparent, secure, and scalable AI platform for enterprises. What's wonderful is that David has also gifted AIMEE to the Good Technology Foundation, a charity he founded and chairs, which is dedicated to providing powerful technology to communities left behind by technological and economic progress. Welcome to the pod, David.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So want to dig in and talk about, you know, the landscape that you're in right now. Mm-hmm. It's one that arguably hasn't seen much exciting disruption or has it. But there's been a significant shift from sort of agency to services, kind of to solutions as well.
Yeah.
As customers have become much more technically aware, I argue. So give us the story behind this and, you know, help us understand how it shapes where you position Voodoo Park today.
Yeah. So it's all us just responding to opportunity, if we're really honest. So when I initially set out in the company, the idea was to do something in AI. Mm-hmm. So this is 2012. And in 2012, AI was recognizing objects and telling you how old you were, sort of stuff, right? And we couldn't find any meaningful use cases for it. There were some big companies had some awful ideas of things they could do, but no one had any money, no budget. So we kind of pivoted and turned those conversations into something much more like agency conversations. And at that point, we're still on what I would call the discretionary side. If you think you take a big organization, there's over here, there's marketing, and marketing have some discretionary spend, which they might use on things like, that's normally where in a previous life, their mobile app would have come from, right? Comes out of marketing. And they do that by they work with an agency to do it because the agency is an expert in this technology. So the thing that you offer is a whole education and then design, delivery, and support and the whole sort of thing around that because this is marketing people and they're not experts in this particular thing. And we sort of started off in that kind of agency sort of vibe. And it's hell. Like, agency is a hell thing to do. I don't know what yours, but you're still doing it, right?
Yeah,
but
hanging in there.
Why
do you think it's hell? Like, well, yeah, what's
there's this? So yeah. I would say there's this sort of, there's a value disconnect. So what we found, so we were different. We might be different from your experience, right? But I felt there was a value disconnect. Mm-hmm. So this represents itself in two ways. The first is the person over in discretionary spend goes, oh, we'd like to have an app. Let's take a really simple example from around about the time when we started 2012, a lot of app work. And you go, okay, so you work it out. You say, so design is this long and build and test and blah, 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 blah. And therefore, it's this much money based on sort of, you know, our rate card and some assumptions and stuff. And they say, okay, cool. I don't want to pay that. I'm going to pay that. So you're going to pay 75% of that.
Yeah.
So you go, okay, well, which of these bits do you not want us to do? And they go, oh, no, sorry. I don't understand that. Right. That's what you're going to do.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm going to pay.
Exactly.
And that's what we're going to deal, right?
Yeah.
And that was like, oh, so that was really hard. And the other thing, the other place where value is disconnected is, I'm not going to say who it was, but it is a large company that double digit percentage of the UK population are customers of.
Okay.
Their head of innovation. So that's on discretionary side.
Yeah.
Their head of innovation. I wrote every PowerPoint presentation and every speech they ever gave.
Wow.
And before they did that, I'd spend half a day with them, educating them on technology, economics, current events, politics, so that they could get up and they could do this. Now, that was not paid.
Wow.
That was because you're allowed to come and build.
Wow.
Right?
But were you being paid for
other
services?
We were being paid to do other stuff.
Okay, okay.
Right? Yeah. So we were building apps for them.
Okay.
Depressed margin because they have huge bargaining power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, but they were getting all these freebies thrown in.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's kind of like feast and famine. So towards the end of the year, they haven't spent their budget. They ring up and they go, can you get rid of 20 grand? And you go, yeah, I can get rid of 20 grand.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there might be another time where they're ahead of spend and you get cut off.
Yep.
Projects get canceled, stuff like this. So it's quite a sort of a cruel burst and boom and bust sort of environment.
Yeah, feast and famine.
And so we sort of set on a mission to kind of gravitate to the other side of the table. So to look for businesses where the core of what they did was technology,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and try and get in with the people that made that technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it stops being kind of like an agency and starts mm-hmm. being kind of like a service.
Yeah.
So you're going to the CTOs of, so our customers now in financial services are the big platforms,
yeah.
the people that make platforms that are used by banks and big insurers, right?
And what made you like sort of niche down in financial services?
One fluke.
Okay.
Right. So as in everything, we got one.
Okay. Yeah.
Completely
first
random set of circumstances that you end up being in the right pub at the right time someone walks you into a meeting and you don't blow it and then all of a sudden you're doing something.
Nice.
And that sort of gives you permission to be there. And then you look at it and you look at how it works. Yeah. You go, well, who am I talking to? I'm talking to the very technical person.
Yeah, yeah.
About a very technical thing. We're having a proper eye-to-eye conversation.
Right.
When I talk about it's going to cost this much to go, yeah, that seems fair.
Okay.
Maybe put a little bit more contingency around that because we've got problems with such and such.
Because they've got the largesse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they have to spend this money.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not discretionary, maybe might do something.
Yeah.
This is, the law's about to change. If we don't change the way that our product works, mm-hmm. our product won't be legal to use in the market. So you've got real must spend.
So it helps you that it's a highly regulated industry to some extent.
Hugely.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, our entire business is predicated on the government changing its mind.
Interesting. Wow, yeah. I mean, and I think people traditionally, because we work with fintechs as well, they think about it as a challenge. But I've not heard it, you know, framed rightly as like, this is an opportunity to kind of help them continually meet the regulatory environment.
If you serve that environment.
Yeah, interesting.
Change is kind of a friend. So we kind of moved into that more kind of services model and started selling to highly technical.
And these are people. CTOs in the financial
services. Yeah, CIO, okay. CTO.
Okay.
So they're people that do know what the tech does. They do know what it does. They understand it. They know it's been there a long time.
Okay.
They're very honest and open. They're not trying to get a deal to keep some of their budget. They're trying to get something over the line in the right time scale because it really matters.
Yeah. So you've talked about, you know, CTOs like being a main client when you sell services, and then sort of when selling AI is sort of becoming the blocker. Can you like sort of help us understand that
piece? So it's almost, it's kind of like, so like the initial, we're in the early phases of like going into the market with AI, right? We've been building a platform since, so we started this journey in 2019.
Yeah.
Platform launches, well, it depends when this goes out. But anyway, September the 9th, which might be like, basically goes live. You see it all over LinkedIn and whatnot, and the website will go up with the platform on it and everything. That will happen on September 9th. So we're starting to have a variety of, we've had like pre-launch conversations with people, and we've got a couple of customers in place.
Mm-hmm.
And we've noticed like a kind of a new dynamic, as a dynamic that I recognized from a long time ago. As we say, so we go and talk to a medium-sized company and we talk to them about our AI and stuff. There's a lot of enthusiasm from right at the top of the C-suite. So your CEO, people like that, the CFO, the board, they're all kind of like, this is really interesting, this is really exciting, we should do this. And then you find that your blocker is in technology, which is kind of really weird because those are people who got really good at talking to previously.
Sure.
But there's a thing happening that happened with mobile, which was the last time I went through anything like this. So in mobile, 2006, 2008, something like that, I was, this before Voodoo, I was at an agency that did big mobile. Mm. And the problem that we had there was that mobile was shiny.
Okay.
Right? And AI is shiny.
Yeah.
And you go and you talk to businesses about what you can do, or you talk about your platform, and it's like, this is how you use this, all this good stuff. And the technical side of the business don't want that to happen.
Interesting.
They want to play with the new shiny toys.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
They want to do that.
Shipping. And is that shipping actual need? Is that kind of...
No, they want to play with the toys. Okay. Right? So it's literally as simple as that.
Got it. Okay. Yeah,
so people get into technology because they're excited by technology. Sure. This is the most exciting thing to happen since the internet.
Yeah.
And so all the people that didn't do the internet, because either they were too young or like me, they were like, doing something cooler than acting, being in bands and shit, which does not pay as well as being a founding father.
No, but cool though.
Looking back now,
pays in street cred.
Higher street cred.
Yeah. But you can't spend
just
it.
Just on a worse street.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't say what street. Yeah.
But the enthusiasm for it now, which is immense, is really powerful from some sectors of the exec table. In other sectors of the exec table, we're kind of seeing, we want to do this, we're going to do it ourselves.
Right.
We've started working with it. And it will resolve, and it will resolve as people get their heads around the ecosystem.
Sure.
Because there's an ecosystem. So AI will change the ecosystem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of business and how businesses work with each other. And as that becomes more apparent, people will start making more rational choices. At the moment, you were seeing kind of two sets of irrational choices. One, everyone is putting the word AI on literally everything.
Yeah. Do you advise against that? Because we're literally working on our repositioning and big debate with our team. Do we add AI to kind of our mission?
Ah, wonderful. Statement?
Yeah.
So, okay.
What's your steer on that?
So thoughts around that, right? And
just advice to like sort of business owners specifically.
In a general sense, right.
Yeah.
So is it actually AI, right? Is it actually AI?
Yeah, the thing
that you offer, is it actually AI, or is it something that you could pretend was AI because it's an algorithm? So be careful about that.
Got it, yeah.
The second one is, like, if I'm the person that's buying this, does the AI benefit me? If it benefits me,
sure.
I want to hear about it.
Yeah, okay.
If it just benefits you, it's like you're putting up a thing going, now with cheaper offshored labor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fair, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, great. I can't wait to reap the benefits of that.
But if you actually are using AI, you're building agents for research, building agents for delivery, you're automating certain processes that are saving yourself and the client's time.
Yeah.
Is it worth mentioning AI?
You could talk about that.
Yeah.
But I think so. It changes, right? So 2023, like up till about October of that year, everybody just put the word AI on every single website on the planet, right? And everybody sort of did that, and that's where we were. And you had to do that, otherwise it just looked like you were reading the news,
right?
And we've kind of moved from that to something I think where people will kind of go, oh, look, we do use modern technology. We're a modern progressive company. We do exciting things with new technology. I think you can say that now. Mm-hmm. I think come a little bit further down the line, you're going to say 100% guaranteed AI free, right? So we'll do copywriting for you with 100% guaranteed AI free.
You think that's coming?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's going to be, they used to advertise, if you go back, they used to advertise bread as being made with scientific processes and stuff like that. Well, wow, now we talk about how it's all 100% natural.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it's sort of like cyclical.
Yeah, it's kind of cyclical.
I mean, I think we're trying to, basically also our brand name, like we're trying to walk that line of like, look, we're smart about AI and we're not getting rid of human ingenuity, and we're trying to perfectly blend the two. Like, do you think there's a lane for that, kind of a middle ground, or do you think people will swing one way or the other?
So what you're talking about is you're talking about taking amazingly talented people, right? The same number of amazingly talented people and giving them a new set of tools in addition to the tools that they currently have.
Do you think that's too nuanced? Like, will that sell? Is that better than, hey, we're all human, or hey, we're fully AI? Like,
I don't think you could say, hey, we're fully human right now, because I don't think anyone will believe you. You'd still get, when people were buying, they go, you're just going to get ChatGPT to do that. So you need to be kind of like open about to what extent.
Sure. Yeah.
So at Voodoo, we developed a kind of a scoring system that you put on content to say to what extent did AI help you?
Content that you're handing to clients
that you make.
Interesting.
That you make, if you write a blog or whatever, you put a tag on the bottom, just say how much did AI help you with this.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, right?
And so kind of a level zero is you did it without even spell check.
This is interesting because I'll just say a person that we know in common literally asked us this the other day, you know, a client. Right. And I think our answer was a little bit like, I wish we had answered in the clear, transparent, I wish we'd pre-answered in the clear, transparent way that you're suggesting. And just said like, look, here's how much we use AI for this. If you want us to dial it down, we can, you know, we injected as much humanity into this as we thought was necessary for it to perform. But, you know, let's have a conversation about what you're comfortable with, client. Like, is that the approach you're suggesting?
Definitely.
Interesting.
Everyone knows that you're using it.
But they want to know how much.
Yeah. But it's like how much. And they will assume that you're using it kind of to their detriment and your advantage.
So do you suggest for agencies to just do what you're doing, be transparent and say, look, this is how much we're using it. We're going to be out front with it. We can play with that number based on your level of comfort and your interest, but let's just put it on the table.
Absolutely. See, if it's like being clear about what purpose, right? So you say, great. So why do you do that? Is that so that you can reduce the costs of producing content,
right?
Or is it so that you can get more reach and more content out really quickly?
Yeah.
Is it about creating content that's a lot more one-to-one-ish?
Yeah.
Right. So we're doing campaigns, but we're really micro-targeting content,
personalizing at scale.
Precision at scale. One-to-one conversations. The whole thing that digital was supposed to do, but like one-to-one conversations at scale.
Yeah.
There's potential to do stuff like that. If we say that's what we're doing, so the client, it's got to be like I as the person buying off you, getting something.
Yeah.
So if it is, there's a new lane down here where I can get stuff cheaper and faster off you, and you go, oh, I like that one.
Yeah.
What's the risk? The risk is slop.
Sure.
Right?
Sure,
okay?
Yeah.
So you're taking out taking out the human out of the link to a certain extent, and your risk is that's not going to be as well finessed as something else. Over here, another thing we can offer is further reach.
Yeah.
So we can reach into places we couldn't get. We can now work in all languages instantly. So suddenly there's a potential to do reach that you couldn't have done before that might have been really expensive, could have been really difficult.
Yeah.
That's fine. And the other over here was kind of like, this is rolled by a human, but they are able to do research in a way that they weren't able to do.
Right,
so where you might have paid for a panel of research or whatever, we can use AI to do research, and maybe that is better. But each of those benefits me as the person buying it, not just putting AI on the tin to say that's a process that you used as if that's going to impress the buyer.
I really appreciate that because it's just like, it's almost like saying like regardless of the tech that's rolling out, you know, that it just actually comes back to that human transparency and honesty and just sort of like, you know, just being upfront about like, here are the risks, here are the rewards. This is still a human interaction, a business deal. And let me be honest with you about what we're getting out of this, what you're getting out of this, you know, and not trying to like hide the ball. Which I think a lot of companies, a lot of agencies do, because they want those margins, they want those gains.
Yes,
again, that's a very human instinct.
So they want AI to give them the leverage gain.
Yeah,
and they want to hold on that. So see an increase in margin.
Yeah,
that's not going to be allowed.
Okay.
And in fact, what's going to happen is you're going to see a push down. I think below, you're going to see a depression of margin below the benefit that you're getting.
Yeah, interesting.
Because people are going to go, you know. My daughter put the brief into ChatGPT.
It was
almost as good as yours.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, almost doesn't convert, and you know, it's a binary thing. This does, that doesn't. That would have been a waste of money.
Yeah.
But people still use that to argue you down.
Do you think folks are going to start, like clients are going to start just A/B testing, like doing their own and then having the agency do their thing and then just sort of realize like I can largely do this myself with the tools that are available now?
Yeah. But I think there is that, but you know, we saw that in a lot of stuff, like with no code, low code stuff.
We kind of
see that. And it's kind of, absolutely, you can do that. Mm. But when I saw clients doing that, it was more about negotiation. It was more about kind of trying to remove some of your status in the negotiation around pricing or terms or delivery or how long something is magically going to take, rather than it being they're going to lift and shift. At the end of the day, there is, and this is the thing that agencies and human-based services need to bear in mind. There's a line that exists between the customer and the agency, right? There's a differentiation. And that line is what they're buying. If you take this thing into here, then you've got, we're going to bring all the devs in here. We're going to give them all this new technology and they can just do that. Brilliant. So when it's late and it doesn't work, it's your fault.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
you've got to go and see your boss's boss's boss mm-hmm. and explain with a PowerPoint that you had to write yourself this time why everything has failed, right?
Yeah,
so you have this differentiation. You have yeah. this line in between here. And yeah. this line is what you're buying.
Yeah.
You're buying someone. True story. I took a phone call at a funeral where a client used the C word at me. Right?
No.
So this is what this line is. Like the lengths that you will go to for a customer
wow.
are not lengths you would go to for a colleague.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you're buying. And yeah. that's what you're buying.
That's really well.
Yeah. You push the problem over that line, magically it got fixed. Oh, it must be using AI. They did that so quickly. No, nobody slept for 2 weeks, bro.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and that's, yeah. Thank you for your... We're getting a lot in the agency world. Let's talk about products. Let's talk about tech. I want to hear about Amy.
Yeah.
You know, want to understand what makes it different from, you know, the various AI tools that companies are mm-hmm. using now. You know, you gave this tool to the technology, good technology foundation. I want to hear what drove that decision. What drove the name of it? Why Amy? Like, kind of talk us through that tool, that product.
The whole thing. So, like I said, we started out with the naive idea that we were going to do AI and very quickly found out we weren't.
Yeah.
We're not. Right? There's no money for this.
Yeah.
And then, so we kept an eye on it. My CTO, Balash, he was previously in AI.
Yeah.
He was doing stuff. He was doing really interesting stuff with imaging. He was doing cancer detection mm-hmm. on scans and stuff. So he's like cool kind of AI guy.
Yep.
And so, we've been sort of keeping an eye on this. You get to about 2019, and suddenly, I think it was 19. It was OpenAI. You could download the weights and biases for a model, a GPT, not chat trained, so a single shot. You just send something in, you get something back. You could get that done. There was no API at this time.
Yep.
It was early, kind of an early doors of that. And we looked at that and we're like, this is actually doing something. This is going to happen. This is genuinely going to happen. And then we thought it would happen really quickly. And then it happened about three years later.
Yeah.
But we thought, oh God, this is like really, really something. And there are kind of our kind of customers that we have access to. So people that will take our call mm-hmm. and start there.
Yeah.
That'll be who we're going to talk to. There are a number of problems that this technology has as it's in its very nature that we kind of need to address. Yeah. So the first big problem that AI has, all the AIs that we have are all artificial neural network based. Mm-hmm. Artificial neural networks are just huge matrices of numbers. There's no if day equals Tuesday, put the bins out in written down inside that you can go and look at, right? It's just huge arrays of numbers.
Yeah. Why are they so bad at math then?
Hmm?
If it's just all these numbers, why are they so bad at math? I've never
understood. Oh, well, how long have you got?
I mean, got 20 minutes.
They're bad at maths because they don't, they're not reasoning or calculating. They are working out what the most likely token, which is like a part of a word. So swimming is made of two tokens, swim and ing.
Okay.
They're working out what the most likely next token is given everything that it's seen.
Okay.
Given everything that you've given it. You say something, it says something, you say something, it says something, you say something. All of that goes in and it works out what's the most likely thing to come out next.
Is that something that the platforms are solving for so that they can just do math better? Or are they adding that reasoning portion?
The way they do maths is exactly the same way that Amy does maths. Yeah. Is when it sees maths, it passes it to something that can do maths.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You give it to like something that was written like 50 years ago that does fucking maths, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Right? You don't try and do it with autocorrect.
Yeah, okay,
right?
Okay.
You kind of you do it by passing it to another subsystem. But you've got that problem. Artificial neural networks.
Yeah,
they're opaque. So if you ask it to make a decision, say let's say financial decision,
yep.
and it comes back and you're unhappy with that, or the regulator wants to understand why you made that particular decision, you just point at a big box and shrug, right?
Yep.
So it's opaque. So that opacity is like that's a real problem. There's another problem as well, there's going to be a bubble and the bubble is going to burst.
Mm. The bubble specifically to what? Like
the bubble.
AI bubble.
Yeah, the AI bubble. Okay. Right. Okay. You look at this technology and you go, this is coming. It's going to be a bubble and the bubble is going to burst. And so CBI is talking about it now.
When do you expect?
Financial Times.
Yeah.
I would 1 or 2 years, maybe sooner.
So companies being overvalued, money being pumped in, that's rationalized by...
I mean, if you look at the UK Stock Exchange, American Stock Exchange, even if you took away the effect of the huge valuation that you're seeing in AI, those are overpriced stock markets anyway.
Of course,
against the underlying fundamentals.
Yeah.
Like 1 in 5 children in the UK live in poverty.
Yep.
We the graph should not be going that way. Exactly. So there is a correctional is coming. It will be like a bubble burst from the experience of sort of AI, which has been very much hyped and hoped.
Totally.
Up into a very high. Now that's not bad for the companies that are being overvalued, right? And the correction will not be bad for the companies being overvalued. No one will actually come to their houses and take property and stuff away.
No, of course not.
There's a very high likelihood that it'll have a huge impact on the underlying economies.
Sure. The government's going to end up paying for it like we did 2008, you reckon?
A better example would be 2020. So the dot-com boom.
Yeah.
And when that burst, it was better. So this is Gordon Brown.
Mm.
And like, this was his, so he did something really cool at that point, right? So he did a big bit of Keynesianism, injected a lot of money into spending, and that protected the underlying economies, also convinced lots of other economies to do the same thing. And so the dot-com bubble burst did not take economies with it.
Okay.
We were mostly protected.
Yeah.
We are now at a point of complete adoption of neoliberal economics, and that will not happen. We will not get investment. We've got austerity. So the likelihood of us falling into recession, falling into depression, all this sort of stuff. But anyway, specifically about AI, right? So you're getting these companies, AI companies, hugely overvalued.
Yeah.
And they are doing huge things to drive that value, like saying things like, oh, that guy that didn't go to Meta because he was offered $1.5 billion for 6 years. I don't believe that.
But, I mean, that alone shows you individuals are being offered. Like, it tells you there's something wrong in the market. Like,
it does. It's a red flag. Or it tells you people are lying to you.
It's
kind of like, that doesn't sound real.
What are they lying about?
Like that $100,000, will you tell everyone that we offered you $1.6 million to come here? Because that will show how seriously we're taking this in. We'll have our stock price.
We want our competitors to think we're doing this strategy, but we're actually...
Yeah. And it just drives stock price. Stock price. Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So we all do that a bit. We all pretend. There was the whole thing. Do you remember Trump, just after Trump got in, Sam Altman turns up at the White House. And we thought we liked it, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then Sam Altman turns up at the White House. And he goes, SoftBank are going to give us a gazillion, trillion, squillion pounds, like the GDP of France or something, to build out all stuff for AI and all that sort of stuff. It went very quiet after the announcement. Not a lot of news about that. Massive surge in everyone's work. Yeah. So at some point, there's a correction. If you look at what's going on now, the way that businesses are working with AI, so there's a huge growth in AI bought tokens, which is where you process, but you use you don't use a locally stored open source model. You use a model that's on Azure if it's OpenAI, or you use Anthropic's ones or Google's ones, and you pay on a per token basis. And we look at this you look at the kind of costs, the in and out costs of those, and they have declined over the last 2 years.
Okay.
Like the token costs have sort of come down. And this has led to huge acquisition. These companies are not making money out of this activity.
Yeah.
At the point where they're not making value because of increased share value, simple. We're just going to turn the price up. By which time we have this huge adoption.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
You see testers being done. I can't remember who was it? Offering a $200 a month plan.
For AI?
Yeah.
Not Anthropic, not OpenAI.
No, it was...
Mistral.
Purple.
It's just cable again. I'm paying to not have ads. Now I have ads. I got to pay more to not have ads. I might as well just have cable. It blows my mind. Yeah.
So there will be, and that will hit, right?
Yeah.
That will hit. And people have invested a lot in putting AI into the middle of their businesses, and their businesses will run on AI and be dependent. Their products will be dependent on this technology, and suddenly the bill will go up by orders of magnitude. They're not going to turn it off and rehire all the people. They're going to pay the bigger bills.
So kind of getting back to Amy and the product, you have this sort of idea of making enterprise AI accessible to kind of smaller companies who don't usually have access to these platform conversations.
Yeah. And transparent.
Is your sort of argument we need to, have our own proprietary platforms to avoid this eventual future when they're just going to
get the... Yeah. So I think there's a number. There's a number of things. Like the first one is where we talk about UK sovereign AI.
Yeah, okay.
So it's looking at having AI capability that is basically UK all the way through all aspects of it. So we're not shipping data to people that have different data laws.
Okay.
Thing that came in with a big, beautiful bill, no state is allowed for the next 10 years to bring in legislation that will hamper the development of AI. massive. You compare that with like Europe's view on this. This is a massive red flag.
Yeah, totally.
That definitely, there's the idea you might end up with a form of divergence where we're not able to sell products into Europe because of the AIs that we're using.
Right.
This sort of stuff, a massive concern.
So like, talk about like conservatives pushing states' rights down and like not allowing, you know, that autonomy that they normally are sort of heroes of, so to speak. That's really interesting.
It's only some rights though.
Yeah, yeah, of course. The rights that we
which rights?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so it's all about states' rights. Well, which rights?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the right to do what exactly?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other podcast,
totally.
And so UK sovereign. So that's like a thing contained in terms of the fact that you're not paying somebody else to process tokens for you. Right. That's like a capability that exists within the platform. Mm-hmm. Transparency, we came up with a new form of AI architecture that allows you to see how decisions were made.
Right.
What data was used to make those decisions, where it learned, who taught it, who told it that, what documents are used, makes the decision-making process transparent. So if someone came back and said, why did you get that person a loan?
Yeah.
You'd be able to look at it and say, this is all the information and all the learning that contributed to that. Tell me where it was wrong. So that's a big step forward. And the other is to make it, it's not a developer platform.
Okay.
It's for people.
It's for,
yeah. Yeah, so people that do the job. So people have the expertise.
Yep.
They're the ones that can create the agents and the systems and the colleagues that the platform.
Which would preserve jobs, you know, maybe,
Also empowers people.
Yeah, yeah,
because
absolutely.
Because the overall mission, if you kind of go, that's the product blurb,
sure.
right?
Yeah,
why
yeah.
should we buy this?
Yeah.
Because we're worried that suddenly token price is going to go through the roof. We're worried about what's going to happen to your data.
Totally.
And you want to like empower your people to onboard with AI and use it more capably.
Augments of the
that's space. Kind of like the business pitch. The underlying reason for doing it is that this technical revolution has to benefit the people.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
The
last
one made a very small number of...
Very rich?
Yeah. Very small number of...
Already rich people.
White men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
White
exactly,
rich
yeah.
men.
Yeah.
Whiter and
even
richer.
Richer. Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. How did it make them whiter? That's what I want.
They were allowed to move to different neighborhoods.
Got it, yeah. Another yacht.
So so that did not benefit all of us. Like, we go back to, you know, 20% of children in the UK living in poverty.
Yeah.
So if we're going to have another technical revolution, and we are, this one needs to benefit the people. This needs to benefit all of us. So how do we do that? We can short circuit.
Mm.
We can take the means of production, which AI is becoming.
Sure. Yeah.
And we can directly put that in people's hands for cost-free.
Gotcha.
And that's what the foundation is for. So we gift it an open source license.
Yep.
It generates money by going and asking people to give it money to various trusts and other things with whom we have common purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that then provides this technology to communities and people in this country and sort of around the world.
And you're trying to get companies to think about like one single AI platform that their business can run instead of lots of separate tools, which like I feel like we're just toggling between Perplexity and Claude and ChatGPT and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How do you then compete with the OpenAIs, the Microsofts, the world, and move small businesses through that AI transformation sort of strategy?
Yeah, yeah. So we talk a lot about the sort of three horizons of AI.
Mm.
So that's kind of like how we sort of position this.
Mm.
And everyone is kind of most people are kind of like, kind of like horizon one and a bit. So horizon one is AI at the edge of your business.
Mm-hmm.
So people that work for you doing a thing and now doing that thing with a bit of AI,
mm-hmm.
right? And they log into a platform.
Yeah,
they've
yeah.
got that. They've got a credit card off HR and then they're now using it to do like a particular thing. And that's kind of like horizon one.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is still doing the same job. Horizon two is where you say, well, we as a business will have an AI, and that AI will empower the business as a whole, including our core proposition. And then the advantage then with Amy is that all of these people down here can draw down that capability and get it to be their finance AI, but it's built by the finance team, not by some developers. It's HR, all this, building all these pieces together. And then your third, so that's where you will end up having like a company AI.
Sure, yeah.
And then the third horizon is when the people that you are selling to, whether that be individuals or other businesses, they are now AIs.
The people you're selling to.
Yeah, so, your customers become AIs.
So help me understand that. Is that like you've now licensed a version of your product to your customer and they're using it? Or is it that they themselves have their own?
So imagine you've got an AI
right? Yeah.
And you would kind of go, oh, well, we really need to get some developers in to do a new website, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's do that. Okay, how should we do that? I could get the Yellow Pages, or I could just ask Amy, could you run a tender process for me, please, with well-recommended agencies and get back to me and let me know who I should meet? and it will go and do a process.
So Third Horizon is your customer is the AI.
So you're the so in that one you're the customer.
Okay.
Your AI is acting as a customer to these other web people. Right?
Yeah.
And it does that by going and talking to their AI.
Okay. For another AI. Okay. So your AI is acting as a customer for another AI.
Yeah.
Are there any existing examples of that out in the wild, or are we not there
no.
yet?
No. Okay. So two things are gonna happen.
Yeah.
One, we're gonna get personal AI.
Okay.
Right?
What is that?
So if you imagine, so you've had AI at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you imagine, say, take something like car insurance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You would just leave your AI to work that out.
Sure.
Just insure. You know about my cars, just go and insure them. I literally don't need to know about
totally,
it.
Totally, yeah.
Right? And so your AI is making decisions. Not motivated by the fact that Stephen Fry was in the advert, right? It's just like
most cost-effective,
coverage.
Yeah,
also, it doesn't mind switching car insurance twice a week.
Okay. Oh wow.
Do you know what I mean? Okay. It doesn't get tired.
But markets will have to change in order for that, right? Like contracts will have to change,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like that's okay. So
yeah.
What you feel
and
like
the nature of provision? Why would you have multiple companies providing something that is entirely undiscernible, other than the way that the brand makes people?
So it's going to shrink the market.
Very
you recommend?
Possible. Yeah. Very possible.
That's really interesting.
So I think what happens in consumer is we probably see like a whole range of stuff. A good line is this. If you've got a teenage children, think of the wraparound that you do, right?
Oh my God.
The wraparound care. So your AI does the wraparound care. Yeah. It sorts out the booking. It makes sure the train, it does this, that, and the other. Make sure they're insured. It makes sure that the UCAS form goes in on time, right? So that kind of wraparound. Mm. So AI will do the wraparound for us, right? It is just making... These are boring decisions. It's just making logical.
I feel like people are hungry for that, though. Like, they want personal AI. And I feel like I've heard whispers about the big platforms trying to push in that direction of like, they want AI to solve their everyday problems.
Yes.
Rather than take their friggin' job you know, reduce their pay because there's an agent now. I mean, what do you think the actual horizon is for us getting there?
So we'll get a shit version of it. Right, soon. So Johnny Ives is working, we'll get an early version.
Okay,
and it will be quite dreadful.
Yeah.
Right, but it will be deliberately
just
dreadful.
Like Blackbird is kind of dreadful.
Yeah. There's a really sound product strategy, which Apple are really good at.
Yeah,
so first in category, because they do new one every year.
Yeah,
right? Always remember that. So first in category, quite shit.
Okay,
that just gets you early adopters.
Yeah.
Next year, a better version that appeals to not just massive early adopters, but early adopters and kind of people with reasonable, higher than normal disposable incomes, plus the early adopters by the new one. Oh, I've just sold another. Year three, this one's actually not bad. Not mass market yet, but we're kind of getting there. The early adopters are now on their third version.
Yep.
The high income people are on their second version.
Yep.
By the time we get to year five, which is the product I want to launch, I've already sold so many units, and there's some guy out there who's on his fifth.
Yeah.
And this is the first one that works.
Yeah.
So that will happen with AI products. Something will come out. It will initially be underwhelming, but people will buy it. And then from that point onwards, it will iterate and become something powerful.
Yeah.
That could do the sort of stuff I was saying, because that's the stuff, there is an appetite for doing that.
Yeah.
There's a massive... whatever the opposite of appetite is amongst the people that provide services to consumers, that it would go that way. If you're selling insurance and you're doing so much stuff to try and create brand awareness, so you basically, the AI is doing what Compare the Market does.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
So it's really nice that you've got a meerkat, but the AI is not influenced by the meerkat.
So how do agencies...
And isn't going to use you, it'll just go to everyone direct.
So should I get out of the agency game? Or like, how do agencies especially brand awareness?
Because there still are, that's like, there are different segments of the market. Different AI-able. And there are different things where taking brand away would be taking something away from us. We do not, it's not like everything should be mashed potato because it's got the same amount of nutrients, right? So, but it is kind of like, there are some things where you're going to really, really feel the squeeze.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see stuff tell your AI about.
Yeah.
Like, so you get an advert and you go, tell your AI to use this money back or something, or tell your AI that you like Stephen Fry. They allow advertising to AIs, right? So they go, well, your guy watched all these films with Stephen Fry in. This product is advertised by Stephen Fry. You could make it such that. That's a market kind of depend. It's like AI has the potential to actually do to capitalism what capitalism always pretended it was doing,
which
is to create some kind of perfect market.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what people are, in some ways, getting at or like hoping for in some not so great ways, I would argue. But also I think other people are saying like, hey, can we actually leverage this tool to kind of truly optimize things for us? And,
yeah.
And like, because this market is ridiculous, right? It's so sort of unequal and so rigged, frankly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
rigged
yeah,
for
yeah.
The white guys on the yachts.
Yeah.
So could AI have the, you know, the, can we
leverage? Is it the great leveler?
Yeah.
Is it the great leveler?
Maybe. Like, I don't know. I think some of us are hopeful about that. We're going to have to cut it there. I want to ask you one final question.
Yes.
Just about like your sort of personal journey. We're going to have to skip the quickfire questions, unfortunately, but we'll have you back. I think you're going to become like our AI Sherpa guru.
Okay.
I just keep bringing you back every 6 months and talking about AI. You've been an actor, you've been a musician.
Yeah.
Care worker.
Yeah.
Now you're a tech founder. That is certainly not your typical journey.
No.
You know, in tech. Curious to hear how you've, you know, woven these experiences into, you know, building Voodoo Park and the Good Technology Foundation and becoming a B Corp and all the interesting good work that you've done in tech. How's it all come together?
How does it all come together? So the honest answer is probably I actually have no idea.
Okay.
So I think it's like there's a form of neurodivergence, which means I am overly fascinated by things I don't understand.
You're a polymath.
Well, mate, we're not a very high achieving polymath. Kind of
there's
a poly adding up. A poly adding up.
Yeah.
But it's just fascination in things. So it is. It does make me have ADHD, that kind of career, because it's just getting fascinated by things that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
But that appear to have some kind of like a complex, and they're all, although they sound really, really different, they are kind of, certainly in my mind, they're kind of similar things.
Yeah.
They're kind of a weird shaped problem to solve, and it's kind of frontier. So there's a sense that you're doing stuff and the grass isn't completely trampled in front of you, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You may not be walking through completely virgin glades, but it's not complete. There aren't the well set paths.
Sure, sure, sure.
And that is kind of like a tragedy. So it's something like that. Just being drawn to what I don't know.
Yeah, I think I relate to that. You know, having been a teacher, nonprofit executive, and working in, you know, education and charities and things like that, and constantly like fascinated by the skills I hadn't realized I was bringing
and the
mindsets. And ultimately, I think a lot of it has to do with people. Like, and that's what things boil down to. And I'm constantly like, oh wow, this is a teaching problem. This is a learning problem.
Yeah,
whether
it's
HR, whether it's convincing a client, selling even, you know. So yeah, really cool to see your journey and to kind of share a non-traditional pathway as well with you. So well, it's been a great conversation.
Cool.
Like I said, I would love to have you back. Really impressed, you know, from our first conversation and to this one with the work you've done at Voodoo Park, the Amy stuff, the AI stuff, and the Good Technology Foundation. I've quite for a while had in my head, like, I think I want to do like a charitable foundation, so we should talk. And especially around the AI stuff, I think there's just going to be so much transformation and sort of a need to support people through the changes that are here and that are coming. So we'd love to just stay in touch with you about that.
Yeah.
For folks listening, it's been another great episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm Paul David, joined today by founder and CEO of Voodoo Park, David Glennie. Please jump in, give us a review, give us a rating so we can keep bringing great guests like David onto the pod. And thank you, David, for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.